If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Well, are you not still on a massive high from our amazing day together yesterday?
I am. I am on a massive high, but I've got to say, I've got my silk turban on. I've got my pyjamas on. It's quite late and I would like to be asleep.
Oh, Georgia.
Hold on.
Well, let's just clear this up, because everything before but we know is bullshit. So what you're basically saying is no. Do you know what? We had such a lovely day today. And it was so nice to actually see you in real life. There was a moment where you looked into the whites of my eyes when we saw each other and I thought, is she going to blow me out for a hug here or is she going in balls deep? And you went in for it. So I was happy about that.
No, maybe I've come over all soft in 2022. Loving a hug.
It was lovely.
No, it was really nice. And do you know what? Normally when we meet up, we like have so much that we need to do. And today we probably should have been doing more than we were. But it was nice to just have like a mooch around the shops and a chat and lunch. And it
You're
just happened to
it
be
out
sunny.
Like we did nothing.
No, we did do some work, but we did manage to actually have like chats and a nice time around it. So
yeah, no, we did well. Lovely. We did well. I'm just gutted because I'm not gutted because I'm on drive time, but I'm over the moon that I'm on drive time, but I'm gutted because it means I miss bedtime. And I don't know about you, George, but it doesn't matter what I do with my day, as long as I can get through that door and make sure that I have, you know, all the cuddles and all the kisses and smell them, then I feel like I'm okay. So I basically just got home and I crept into the bedrooms and did that weird creepy mum thing where you stare at them when they're asleep. But to be honest with you, they do that to me.
Do they? In the morning.
Oh, fucking right. In the mornings, middle of the night, they're always creeping around my bed. So
I tell you what, Gigi walked through the door today until 8 o'clock.
8 p.m.
Yeah, because she'd been staying with James's mum and dad. Like she stayed there last night. And Axel had been asleep since like 5 past 6.
You and I are the same.
We're like, Axel. Every time she's Axel as well, it sounds like arsehole, which makes it even funnier. So she's like, where's the arsehole, basically?
Oh God, having kids is fun, isn't it? Yeah, it's delirious. Let's get on with it. Do you know what? We need to get into it because we are delirious. We haven't been drinking and this week's chat is absolutely phenomenal with a complete and utter legend. I feel she needs no introduction, but Georgia, go on, do it anyway.
Today we are chatting to Paula Radcliffe.
So joining us on today's podcast, I really, really hope that I don't get any of this intro wrong, because for me and George, this lady is a bit of a heroine to us. Okay, here we go. A former British long distance runner. She's a 3-time winner of the London Marathon, 3-time winner of the New York Marathon. Still okay so far. Chicago Marathon winner. She was previously the fastest female marathon runner of all time. She is also MBE. She is mum to Isla and Raphael. Today's guest, what a legend this lady is. It's Paula Radcliffe.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
How are you, Paula?
I am very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good. We're really excited. Really excited about this. I mean, Zoe is definitely more into her speed running than I am. I say I do a jolt, which is like a mixture between walking and jogging.
And talking.
We're both really excited.
Paula, are you still into your running? Like, do you love putting on your trainers now and putting on your lycra and heading off out and hitting the pavement?
Yeah, I don't really hit the pavement so much. I do a lot of trail running now. I just enjoy, I'm lucky that I live in an area I can get off-road fairly quickly, and I kind of like exploring. I'm not particularly interested in seeing how much slower I am running for miles on the road. But I do really enjoy and probably need that time out running for me as well. I think just to clear my head and to set myself up for the day ahead and just to think things through. If I've got to write something down or prepare a talk, then it helps me to go for a run first. I feel like I'm a bit more creative, a bit more thoughtful afterwards.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's important to start this podcast because you might be a bit nervous about chatting to us. You know, you're a marathon runner, but I was the 800 meter under 14 champion. Okay. So you're a champion, I'm a champion. Just to put you at ease today.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
Great. That's so funny. And I'm not a champion at all. So I'm glad that I'm with two champions now.
Yeah. Make you feel better, George. Paula, before we get into kind of talking to you about your project, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, life as a mum. And, you know, you've obviously got two. You've got Isla and Raphael. Isla, teenager, Raphael heading in that direction. So what is it like having, you know, slightly older kids to us?
Yeah, I mean, every stage of the kids feels really special when you're in it. And there are also challenges when you're in it. And I think they change and they evolve as they get older. So you kind of think it's going to get a lot easier. And then you get to teenage meltdowns and total irrational behavior, and trying to manage that and kind of walk that balancing line, I guess, of just not over disciplining but disciplining enough. And I guess my biggest goal is just trying to make sure that they turn out into decent human beings, which sometimes can feel like they are to everybody but you. But that kind of has to feel a little bit, I guess, like winning, and you just got to work on how they treat you.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you feel like, you know, are you through the woods in terms of like when you're in the newborn bubble that you're constantly worrying about everything, or do the worries just get bigger as they get older?
I think the worries, they get different, and you have a lot less control over them. Things that worry you when they're very small, it's kind of easy to get on top of that and to keep them in your sight the whole time. I think one of the things you have to accept, and that's where I'm lucky in that I guess mine are growing up in a kind of a bit of a bubble here in Monaco, in that it is safe even for my 11-year-old to go off on his scooter and to go off around and kind of have that freedom, but in a little bit of a protected and more sheltered way. So you kind of, you have to learn to let go. And I think what's helped me is really drumming into them, okay, if you change locations, that's allowed, but you need to tell me.
Yes.
So I need to know where you are at any time, and being able to have things and tabs on them without them feeling like they're controlled kind of gives them a bit of independence. So he has an AirTag in his wallet at all times.
Wow.
So I can track him on that. And he also has his Explorer watch, which means that even if he's scooting and he's not got his phone to hand, it's going to ring on his wrist, so he knows to answer it and he knows to tell me where he is if I'm looking for him.
That's amazing. That's nice, because they feel like they've, as you said, they've got their own level of independence and they can do their own thing without thinking, well, mum and dad are watching over me the whole time. But actually you kind of are as well. So
yeah, if I need to be, I can. But it's kind of
you can
develop that trust as well and kind of say, okay, well, he's moved now and he hasn't told me he's moved, so then we have to have that conversation about why he moved without telling me.
Do you sit there for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and you see him moving and you're thinking, oh God, he's not told me yet. How long am I going to leave it? That's what I'd be sitting there thinking.
Sometimes I'm a bit mean. So I will actually just call him and say, okay, I'm at where you told me you were going to be and you're not here. So where are you? Because I'm now really worried and I've got the police out looking for you. And they'll go, oh my God, I didn't have a signal. I couldn't call you then because I didn't have a signal.
that's like mean girls behavior. I quite enjoy that. And talking of worries, on a really serious level, you've had pretty much one of the biggest worries that any parent can go through when Isla, your 14-year-old in 2020, was complaining of pain, you know, on the trampoline, various other places, problems with her periods. And you discovered that she had a tumor on one of her ovaries. So just talk us through that journey for you guys.
So it happened really through kind of the summer of getting back to normal after the pandemic. So in through July, the kids had bought a trampoline at the start of lockdown. So in March, with their pocket money, they pulled it together. And it was a really great investment because through all of the homeschooling, if they needed to just get out in the garden and burn off some energy, burn off some frustration, they could go out and do that. And so she started to say in July that it was hurting her bladder and it felt like she needed to pee all the time. And I think then, I mean, it's one of the things I feel guilty about now, but I immediately thought pelvic floor exercises and just kind of was she drinking enough? Was she not hydrated enough? Mm. It never really came into my mind that it could be something more difficult than that.
Mm. At what moment did you know, I think we all do this, don't we? We don't automatically go to the worst case scenario. We just think, it's okay. Like you say, like maybe it's pelvic floor, maybe she's dehydrated. At what point did you think, no, this isn't right and we need to go and see somebody?
I think it was a culmination of lots of things coming together. So there were pretty bad mood swings as well, which to begin with, I kind of just put down to typical teenager. Yeah. And then really painful periods, which I'd never had. And again, my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law had. So I just kind of thought, well, maybe that's from the other side of the family. But it was when she started to get the kind of breakthrough bleeding all the time and her period would come and then it would go away for a week and then come back again. That for me definitely wasn't normal, even though some people say that it does happen when girls can start the period. So I just thought, right, at that point, okay, I need to go to the pediatrician. And then when we went to the pediatrician and she examined her, she could feel the mass on palpitation. And when I said to Isla, have you felt that? And she said, well, yeah, but I was worried it was just that I was getting fat. So I'd started to do a lot of different stuff in the gym and ab stuff. And she hadn't told me. And it wasn't noticeable kind of standing up in a swimsuit. So I did feel really bad as well that she hadn't discussed that with me. Having said that, the pediatrician was amazing. We were in for an ultrasound scan the next day. That afternoon, we were already at the Children's Hospital in Nice, and they ran a whole barrage of tests and sent us home with an appointment the next day at the pediatric hemo-oncology department, which already kind of then sets alarm bells ringing. I was trying not to Google lots of things overnight, but obviously I was kind of looking at worst case scenarios, any case scenarios, and kind of trying to take advice. I'm lucky as well. My sister-in-law is a GP, and I've got some friends that I can trust to, okay, go away and look at it, because I don't want to know the worst case at this stage. I'll find out for tomorrow, but I do need to be prepared for kind of, so when I get the answer tomorrow, what do we do from there? And so that I was really lucky to have those friends that were able to do that. And then when we went back the next day, the oncology department were amazing in Lache in Nice, and immediately reassured me, explained to her in really teenage comprehensible vocabulary what was going to happen. And she was so strong and so tough. I mean, it never entered her head the serious, scary things that are associated with cancer that I think would come into the heads of ours and of adults. And it was only much, much later when she was actually chatting with Gemma Hillier-Moses, who we do some work with on some of the training camps. And she started Move Against Cancer charity. And she was talking and she said the first thing that came into her head when she was told was, am I going to die? Whereas Isla's was, am I going to lose my hair? Because right. She never, it never registered with her that she wouldn't beat it. It was just, what do I have to do to beat it?
Do you think that was a blessing?
Yeah, I think it was a blessing. Reflection. She said afterwards, does that make me really callous? I said, no, because it didn't enter your head as a possibility. Mm. And that made you stronger. And it was also huge thanks, I think, to the way in which she was informed by the team from the beginning. Okay, this is not something, anything that you've eaten. And that was really important for me. This is nothing that you've fed her. This is nothing to do with where you live. This is nothing to do with living close to a 5G mast or anything like that. This is a cell that was in her body from the minute that she was conceived. And it's a rogue cell and it's triggered by puberty.
Right.
And so they explained it all really, really well. Right. And that it's completely different from ovarian cancer in adults. It's called a malignant germ cell tumor. And so basically that germ cell is there and it's growing very, very slowly, and then it's hugely triggered by puberty. So it just starts growing very, very quickly. And that's why if we look back on it, she started her periods, or she may not have started her periods, in the March of 2020. And that certainly accelerated that, but whether that was already bleeding from the tumor or the periods, they couldn't really answer. But they tried to answer those questions, and she was really worried about not being able to have children later on.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we can't guarantee it, but there's no reason that your other ovary should be affected. And lots of people go through life functioning with one ovary. They just don't know that only one ovary is functioning. Yeah. So they were really good about explaining things like that. And we talked about it and we said, okay, that's not a priority right now. A priority right now is getting better. And then afterwards, down the road, we find out about that and we deal with it when we get to that moment.
For anybody listening, Paula, that's been, you know, that parent that's about to walk into, you know, the doctor's room and waiting for that result, what was that reality like for you guys, for both of you?
I think it was very different for us because we were in a pandemic as well. So Gary couldn't come to the hospital for that appointment. He had to wait at home, which was extremely hard on him. She was brought into for the original consultation. The doctor examined her. She obviously had all the test results and everything there. And then she sent her out again while she told me. And so she then immediately went into the waiting room and phoned her dad and said, it must be really bad because they're telling mom before they tell me. So I'm not sure that was handled in the best way, but on the other hand, it was, because I was able to break down for the shock to hit me and to ask those questions and to kind of get in control of what I was going to be like when she came in back into the room. And of course, she could tell that I was upset, but I was in control by the time she came back in. So we were able to kind of, from all sides, from the doctor's side and from my side, reassure her that this is not nice, it's not great, but we're going to get through it. And we've got a plan, and they've got a plan that's worked on a lot of people before. So I think that's key, having that team around you and being happy with that team around you and trusting in them, because it is a journey. Ours was, I guess, relatively brief compared to what other parents go through. But you need to know that you're happy in the team and you're happy with the plan for that journey. Because if you're not, I think you need to kind of make sure that you are and put things in place. And then the other thing I would say is absolutely put that support team around you, friends and family, because you're going to need them for lots of things. Having a second child as well, I had to try and make sure that he wasn't missing out in any way, because naturally the main focus was on getting his sister through that, but I wanted to make sure that he was fully supported. So having friends that were able to do that, to make sure that he had someone to go over his homework with him if I wasn't there, that he could go and stay and sleep over at friends if we were involved with Isla, just things like that, just making sure that he had someone he could talk to and he knew at any time. If he came to me and said, okay, mum, I really need you right now, then that was really important, but it had to be something important.
You could be there. And from the moment that you found out the diagnosis and throughout, how did you hold it together as parents? Were there times where, you know, you sat together, and did you ever break down in front of the children?
Yeah, I mean, I think not in front of Raphael, but I think Isla, she didn't see me completely break down, but she saw me just after I'd been told the news. So I think it was impossible to hide that I wasn't upset. She was going to be upset. So I tried not to hide it, but just to talk about what we were going to do to get through it and to reassure her. And also, there's times as a parent when because they're going through something scary and they're getting their body pumped full of chemotherapy, which isn't nice, and it's not easy. And she certainly has a tendency when she's tired and when she's not feeling great to kind of lash out. And so I also had to step in and say, okay, that's not acceptable. You can do that to me. You cannot do that to the nurses. You still have to be polite to them, and you still have to treat them with respect. And she was very quick to take that on board. But yeah, it doesn't feel nice that you're kind of forcing her to get out of bed and get dressed and kind of be polite to people when she's not feeling like it. But does help her to kind of put some more normality back into the day. It was also tough for her because she couldn't have friends around unless they were in a mask and on the other side of the room because of the affected immune system. So I think those things to deal with are hard. It's not like kind of, I guess, ordinarily we would have been able to take her out for treats in the off time between chemo stays. And those had to also be really managed to make sure that they were safe. So sometimes she would want to go out to eat with her friends, and we had to work out what was the safest way that she could do that, because her white blood cell count was low. I mean, again, luckily it was kind of through the warmer months, she could go and eat outside with them, and we could kind of set that up.
Yeah. And so I'm guessing from, you know, the chats that we're having now about chemo, that was the plan. Did they sit down with you and tell you, you know, how long she would have to have chemo for, how many rounds, what the result would be? Because you said, you know, obviously diagnosis horrendous, but seems to be quite a positive plan of action, I guess.
Yeah, they did. So they sat down with us and they talked to us about how chemo had very good results with this type of cancer, and that we would see the tumour reducing in size. And that was the plan, that she would have three rounds of chemo. So it was three types of chemo drug. It was, cisplatin, bleomycin, etoposide. And so those three, and two of them were kind of every day over 5 days, and the other one was on the first day of the week for 3 weeks. So she would have to go back in as an outpatient for each of those, for the second two of those. And then the rest of the time she would be in hospital for like a 7 day stay. So we would come in and she would be constantly hooked up to a drip. And that would be delivering the chemo drugs for the times that I think one took about 2 hours, and then there was a bit of a break, and then another one took a half an hour, and then the other one that was every 3 weeks, I think, only took about 10, 15 minutes. But then they would keep her on all the time, the hydration drip, to make sure that it was getting flushed through, because I guess that's the big thing that I didn't really fully understand about chemo before, is that it needs to get flushed out of the body as quickly as possible once it's kind of done its work.
What, so in and out, basically?
Yeah, so it's really important that they stay very well hydrated. So what they did for her was they just kept her in that entire... So we would be in for 5 days on the chemo treatment and then another full 24 hours of saline drip, just trying to flush it all out of her, so that when she went home, it had kind of majority-wise cleared her system. And then we had to be really careful of how we disposed of it, and they were also running checks on the urine.
What was the aftermath of those stints in hospital with the chemo? What was she like in herself? What was her appetite like? What foods did she like to eat when she got home, that kind of thing?
When she got home, she was kind of pretty much back to normal. It was while we were in the hospital that was really tough, because while she was on the chemo, that did really affect what she felt like eating, what she felt like she could eat. So the first day, I'd kind of gone in with all of what I thought were her favorite foods packed in a little bag. I knew there would be a microwave that I could use there. And she just didn't really want to eat anything. And she was eating little bits of rice, plain rice with lemon juice on. And that was about all that she would have. And then it got to about the fourth day, and my friend was on the phone, and she said to her, do you think she could eat a homemade pizza? And I said, well, do you think you can eat homemade pizza? And she was like, I can if it's Aida's. So she made one, and she drove it over to Nice.
Oh,
wow. And she brought it in, and she wasn't allowed to go into the hospital room. So I took it into the hospital room and then went out to chat to her. And then Isla sent me a message saying, thank you so much, I've eaten the whole thing.
Oh,
and you cannot imagine how happy that made me, and how grateful I was to my friend to see that her eating and eating well, because obviously the hydration I didn't need to worry about because she was on the drip the whole time. But I did feel that certainly I think from everything that I've learned through running, nutrition is really important to helping the body fight things. And so it really worried me that she couldn't eat. So once she was able to eat, and then the following times we kind of went through different cycles, lemon juice was a big thing. So she could eat plain rice with lemon juice on, with salmon and lemon juice. Lemon juice really helped her to be able to eat things. Mashed potato and gravy was another one.
Oh, well, that's everyone's favourite. I love that.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
You mentioned that, you know, it's really important to have a support network around you. But how were Isla's friends during that period? Because I can imagine as a 14-year-old, it must be hard to know what to say, what to do, how to support a friend that's going through something like that.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's really important, I think, that the friends also tailor it to the individual, because some people want to be contacted all the time. Isla was more like she needed to know that her friends were there, and when she came out, she could see them, but also that her friends wouldn't be annoyed with her and upset if she said, you know what, I'm too tired today. I can't do it. I can't do the FaceTime from the hospital, because she had like a big fleece hoodie thing, and she basically just hid in her bed the whole time that she was in hospital, and she didn't want to FaceTime anybody or see anybody in there, but she wanted to be able to send messages and to chat with them. So I think it is really having those friends that you can say what you need from them, and also being that secure that you can say to them, okay, I'm going to be grumpy and I'm going to not want to speak to you on these days, so then if you want to check up on me, then just go via my mom. And that's one thing that I found really helpful as well, is the parents and the mum support group chat. So I didn't have to send 50 messages out every day with updates. I could just send one message on the group, and then that would kind of get spread from there. So I knew that support was there if I needed the help. So I had one that was for Raphael's support group outside of the hospital. So if I needed something to check up on him while I was in hospital, and Gary couldn't do that. And then the other one was for people who supported me. So if I needed to say, okay, I need to speak to someone now, so I need to go into the parents' room and just have a cry and have a talk to somebody and not have her in earshot.
Wow. What was life like for you and Gary during this period as a couple? Because, you know, this is such a huge monumental thing to happen to you guys as a family. So I guess, you know, how did he cope with it, and how did you guys kind of maybe even have a little escape from it, just the two of you, if that was possible?
We're very different in the way that we cope with it. And looking back, perhaps it was good that only one person was allowed to stay in the hospital, because I don't know if he could have seen his little girl go through that. I think on that side, perhaps it's slightly easier for the mum to be able to do that. And he could come in during the day and visit and be the kind of fun pick me up. And he didn't have to see how drained she was when he left. So he could see that he'd made her smile, and that made him feel better, and go back home. And then she would be completely wiped after she'd done that, because it was good and he kind of lifted her spirits, but it also used energy, and she was running low on that energy.
Yeah, and I guess we all have different strengths as parents, don't we? And I guess you guys worked as a team and you played to your strengths. And if he was the one who could come in and lift her spirits, then that's incredible.
Yeah, and then he could also make sure that he was there for Raphael and looking after him the whole time. So I didn't need to worry about that. And I think talking about things he could be better. But he always is a good sounding board for me. So he doesn't particularly like to open up about his emotions, but I do. Mm. And he doesn't kind of shy away from that. He will just call a lot and listen to me. And sometimes say, oh, just you are being stupid, or don't worry, it's going to be fine. I'll sort that bit out. So that really helped, I think, that he was able to manage those things.
And how is Isla? Tell us how she is now, and tell us how that, I guess, how it sort of has played out over the last 12 months.
She's doing really well. So we just had the, it was the first one of the second year of 3 month checkups. So she'll have checkups every 3 months for the first 2 years, and then every 6 months for the next 2 years, so for 4 years. And so it's always reassuring. She always gets a little bit worried. We go in and we do blood tests, and we do an MRI, and then they alternately do tests on her hearing, because that can be affected by one of the chemo drugs, and tests on her lungs. And so her lungs haven't been affected, touch wood, and probably hopefully won't be now. And the hearing was initially affected, but seemed to pick up this last checkup. So that was good news.
Great.
And the other good news is that with the type of cancer that she has, there is a clear marker in the blood. So it's alpha theta proteins, yeah. And it needs to be less than 10. Normally, and hers was 73,500 in the beginning, which enabled the diagnosis, which is why there was really no question. This is the diagnosis. We can see the tumor, and we can see this. So there is no other diagnosis for that. But it's also really good for us to see. So this last time, hers was 4, and the time before that, it was 6, and then before that was 2. So now that's really good, because we could see immediately before any tumor started to grow if that was happening again. And so that's reassuring, I think, for her to be able to do. So even though she goes through that cycle of worrying about it, to get that news, it is reassuring for her, and it's reassuring for me.
Oh, I bet it is for you guys, you know, as parents, to see that and just think, well, this is, that we're on the road to recovery. This is amazing. Is she back kind of exercising? Are you guys running together?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the tough thing, I think, for any 14-year-old girl. And it's one of the things that has kind of pushed me to really get behind Runfest Run and to get behind Families on Track and everything like that, is I think we really haven't seen the full extent of the lockdown and the pandemic on kids' activity levels yet, and particularly on that girls 13 to 16 years old, because once they stop sport, to get back into it, it's really, really hard. And so we're seeing that it stopped for a different reason, not because of the pandemic, but because of the treatment. And she's been able to get back into hockey, and she's kind of, she wants to get back into running, but it's A, finding the time in the week, and B, the confidence, because she was very good. I mean, even February before she was diagnosed, she'd won the regional PACA region of France cross country championships. And so she's very scared that she's not going to be at the level that she was, because her body has changed a little bit, and her fitness level certainly dropped off. So it's, she really needs time to be able to build back in at her own speed and on her own before she joins in with a group. But she doesn't have that time because she's in the French education system as well, and she's doing her brevet this year, which is actually quite hard. Plus, she missed the first trimester of year one of that. So she's still trying to catch up academically. I think, it's hard. I think we've got to be patient. And it is being flexible, because I would really love her to be more active and to get more into that. But there's a limit to how much I can push her at this stage, because she has a lot on her plate. And it kind of is baby steps. And at least she is back playing hockey and she's enjoying that. And that is a team atmosphere.
That's brilliant. You mentioned that in general, girls, you know, once they fall out of exercise, especially between the ages of 13 and 16, did you say, it's really hard to get back into it. Why do we think that girls drop out of exercise? I mean, talking to me, like I think I used to write myself notes for PE like every single week to try and get out of it. I had my period. I had this. I had
Georgia.
That. I did. I felt it.
Dr. Dayton in the house. She can't possibly do PE today.
It was like everybody did it. All of my friends were just trying to get out of PE, and I can't even think why. What is the reason? Why do so many girls hate doing PE in sport when they're teenagers?
A little bit of peer influence. So if one person starts doing it and they're the cool girl, then that kind of spills over. And that's one of the reasons I think all the different sports need to really work hard to make sport cool. And making the gym kit that you wear at school much better. I mean, it's already 100 times better than it was when I was a kid growing up. But back then, I mean, air tech stuff and a gym skirt wasn't really what you wanted to change into to do sport, even if you liked sport. So if you didn't like sport, that was really a kind of a bit of a game changer. Not being able to shower and stuff afterwards doesn't really help girls either. It's that age when girls' body is changing and their self-confidence is changing. And so it's kind of making sure that they do really understand that and are able to work with it and embrace it. And there are so many different reasons. And I think, yeah, there are other avenues for girls to focus on. Whereas with the boys, it kind of does still stay cool to hang out with your mates and kick a football around. And it isn't always that for girls. It's starting to get better, I think. I mean, I know through lockdown, Isla was joining up with a lot of her friends for actually Zoom core classes and Zoom yoga classes. So that actually did help give them something to do during the day. And so, yeah, I think it is just putting those things in place and kind of, yeah, role models within sport. The media reporting of women's sport isn't the same level in a lot of sports. It is in athletics, but it's not in other sports like football, for example. So that could maybe help to give those girls more role models for the sports that they're interested in.
Also, I look back at my time at school and I think hopefully things have changed a lot now, like we said, Paula. But you know, if you weren't playing for the A team, there was a bit of like a probably just sit this one out or don't worry about it. There wasn't that motivation necessarily to just enjoy it for playing sport, just really enjoy it. And I'm hoping now my stepdaughter who's 8, you know, netball she's in the C's, but for example swimming she's in the swim squad, but she's enjoying all of it because they are celebrating all of her regardless of whether she's the best, you know, or the second or the third or fourth, whatever. She's just enjoying that moment of being active. And I think when we were at school it wasn't necessarily the same as that. Like if you weren't the best you weren't really part
there's
of
no
it.
Point yeah
there's no point yeah
yeah it's a, there's the two schools to it, isn't there? There's elite sport and then there's sport for health and sport for general well-being. And I think it is really important that the schools provide the health and general well-being and all of the life lessons that we can learn from sport, like working as a team, knowing your own body, the well-being and mental well-being side of it, and act as a pathway to the more elite sports. So they kind of just funnel people on to the sports clubs if they want to take it to that next level, but not make it too intimidating in schools, because it is something that everybody needs to be doing at that level.
And just quickly, I really want to ask you this just for a personal thing. I love running, obviously, and me and the kids kind of very active out in the garden and stuff. But the other day we accidentally went on a run together, me and my two little ones who are 5 and 3. I thought we were just going to go for a walk, and then Luna was like, oh, why don't we just run around the rest of it? And then before I knew it, we were all having this like family run together. It's probably maybe about 0.5 of a mile that we ran back, and they loved it. Is 3 too young? I mean, how old should you kind of start running with your kids?
When it's like that and it's just having fun, 3's the perfect age to be running around. I mean, that's what we're trying to, I guess that's the age group we're trying to hit with the Families on Track events. So that came about because Isla and I ran a relay and she ran 3K, I ran 7K for a 10K relay. And then she finished and she said, but why don't we make that more fun so that everyone can do that? So I started thinking about an Ekiden type thing. And then I thought, well, you can't just abandon kids along the route somewhere. So I worked with Steve Cramer and with the Events of the North team, and they helped me bring Families on Track to life. So it's basically through a family changeover zone where you decorate your own pen as a team. It's actually really COVID friendly. And the team's in there. And then you have loops of 250 meter loop, 500 meter loop, and a 1K loop.
Right.
And you make your 10K up how you like. It's not particularly a race. It doesn't really matter how fast you cover that 10K, but it does matter that the whole family achieves it together and that everybody gets to run. And so to see those little kids racing around 250 meters and then yelling at dad while he's trying to run around a K, it is really good. And you get the kind of the whole range of people coming up to you afterwards, from parents that are keen runners and have not been able to get their kids interested in sport, to the opposite end of the spectrum, the kids and their parents have not run since school and they've actually got out and run round. And so that's the aim, is to make people see it as a way of having some quality family time together,
yeah.
having fun. It's not necessarily training and it's not necessarily competitive, although you will always make it competitive even amongst the family.
Yeah, I guess it's something for all ages. You know, if you've got really young children or you've got teenagers, it's something that you can get involved with. You mentioned earlier Run Fest Run. Can you just tell us a little bit about that? She sounds incredible, like a great few days.
Yeah, George, we're going.
You really have to come. It's an amazing weekend of fun, basically. It's kind of built on the model of Carfest, developed for runners. So you've got running for everyone, basically. You've got the fun run, the bug, big bug family run, and the 2.5K, 5K, 10K, half marathon. So if you're a serious runner, you can do all of it. We're divided into teams. So we've got the butterfly team, of which I'm the captain. Steve is captain of the bees, Colin of the dragonflies. And then we also have the ladybird team, which was Chris Evans and Tash Evans. And that they are the team captains. We are the team captains. And every run that you do adds up points for that. And then the finale is kind of the big bug fun run, and you go and you collect. We have in previous years. I'm not sure even what the surprise format will be this year. But you collect the pollen in different ways, and then that adds up to a winning team at the end of it. But it's kind of all in good fun, because we're all winning, really, because we're all there having a friendly family weekend. There's lots of great entertainment. We've got Top Loader. We've got Sophie Ellis-Bexter.
Oh, she knows how to put a disco on, doesn't she? I love her.
Yes, definitely. And get involved with the family as well. So it's just a really good, there's lots of really healthy food. There's lots of really also feels like unhealthy food, but probably is a little bit healthy when you're doing that much running over the weekend. And it's just a chance to be in a safe environment with the kids as well, which I think is important for parents, and to have that fun. And this year as well, I think we're going to have a night run, which is really good fun. So in the grounds of Englefield House in Berkshire, between the 20th and the 22nd. So we kind of all arrive on the Friday afternoon, it kicks off. And then there's entertainment on the big stage Friday night and Saturday night and through the day on Sunday. And just lots of different activities to get involved in and just to try out.
Okay, and before we say goodbye to you, because we know you're a very busy lady, we love to ask our guests the best piece of advice that they've ever been given, or the piece of advice that they would give a new parent.
Before I had Isla, I read lots of books and I really worried about what I would do. And then I actually realised that the best thing to do is trust your instincts. And that's what my mum kept saying to me. She said, look, you will know. And if you don't know, you'll figure it out quickly. And so she said, just don't expect to go in knowing everything. And sometimes you just have to go with your gut feel. And if you get it wrong, go with the second gut feel. So I think not be too hard on yourself and be flexible with it. And also embrace the feel good part of it. From the moment that baby comes out and they're okay and they're healthy, something inside of you changes. And so enjoy that. Enjoy that. For me, that was really precious first 4 or 5 days when I was in the hospital, and it was just me and the baby, and just getting to know them and getting to learn what the different cries mean, and just spending that time there. And so just trust in your instinct, and sometimes it will feel like it's all getting on top of you. And then some great advice that I was given by a friend of mine who had 4 kids at that stage, it's like, you know, sometimes it is okay to make sure that they're safe in their cot, and then just go and make yourself a cup of tea, calm down, have a think and go back. There'll be no harm happens to them. And you get karma.
And you mentioned a few products earlier, like the geotag and that kind of stuff. What products do you swear by for teenagers?
Okay, for teenagers, I think the Explorer X5 watch that my son has, where you actually put a SIM card in it, it's kind of aimed for probably 6-7 year olds up to 11 year olds, because you control that on your phone, and you can put in 10 numbers and they can only receive calls from those 10 people, and they can only make calls from 10
amazing.
People. You can turn on school mode so they can wear it in school. You can track where they are, but they can't make any calls or receive any calls on it while they're in school. But the minute they come out of school, that school mode clicks off. So then you can call them and find out where they are. And it also tracks activity. So they win points for how many steps they've done. And then at the end of the week, they can go to the store and they can buy fun things like, I don't know, they can build right up to a trampoline, or it can be as simple as a skipping rope or a drinks bottle.
This is incredible.
Kind of things that encourage activity. So that's really, really good product.
I guess
it's pre-teen because by the time they get to teenagers, they kind of have more than 10 friends when your mom and dad have taken up two of those already. So they kind of needs to be an evolution of that, I guess, for the teenagers.
Could you chuck some running products in there as well, please, Paula? Just because I'm such a running geek, I'd love to know what you never go running without.
Okay, well, I guess the big thing for me is my shoes. I don't like to run fair with headphones, but my daughter does. So she wants to run with her AirPods Pros because she says that they stay in the best when she's running. I prefer to be in tune with my surroundings. And for me, I guess it would be at the moment, as a parent, my Apple Watch, because I don't like running with my phone. I like to be able to escape, but I still need to be reachable by my husband and by the kids if they need me. So that does help me. I run in the Pegasus Trail, Nike Pegasus Trail. I run in the Zoom Fly, and I run in the Zoom Tempo Next Percent now as well. So yeah, the new shoes that have kind of, I guess, come in for a bit of flack. But I think if it's new technology and it helps, particularly as your body's getting older, and it helps to protect that, then it's great.
Writing that down.
Okay. Yes, I was going to go and buy all three of those pairs.
thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute honour to chat to you. We won't keep you any longer, but we're so thrilled that Isla's, you know, where she is in her recovery.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
I'll see you at Runfest.
We'll see you there.
And bring the kids along to a Families on Track there as well.
I knew she was going to be amazing, and she was.
What a total inspiration.
I mean, going through that and having to witness your daughter, you know, the mind just boggles on how you keep so strong. And I love that she was so honest with us about, you know, the differences between her and her husband and how he doesn't necessarily cope with that levels of stress the way that she does. And, you know, she was the point of contact that was having to kind of make sure that everything was okay, you know, that everything was kind of on the surface okay.
And it's great, actually, in, you know, any parent's worst nightmare, but they almost played to each other's strengths and worked as a team to get through it. Mm. And I wonder if, you know, a lot of her mentality, like, you know, where she said, you know, we had a plan and, you know, we had to trust the people who are working with us, and as long as you were happy with that, we could be okay. I wonder if that mentality comes from her sporting background, because it's almost like, you know, you follow a plan to get to this goal, you follow this plan, and that maybe helped her in some way, like just know that they had to just knuckle down and get through it. You can't let your mind go to how she
to a place like that.
To how she must have been feeling. Like, I just, it's every parent's worst nightmare.
Yeah, and also how amazing, you know, to have such positive results back now. And they've been through such an incredible 12 months, and now to be in a place where, you know, it's looking like it's all going to be all right. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So we're so honoured to have her on, and massive thank you to Paula for talking to us the way that she did. And yeah, I feel like me and Paula probably go for a run together sometime. I mean, it's going
to
happen.
We're going to go to Runfest, aren't we?
Runfest run. Are you? Because you've said all the right things on the podcast, but I'm definitely going.
You are, aren't you?
Yeah. I'll take someone else with me. If anyone listening wants to come.
I might go to Jog Fest. I'm not sure if up for running yet.
Blow dry bar. I thought that's what you were going to say. I'm going to go to blow dry bar and you're going to go to Run Fest Run. They've announced their dates as well. I think the tickets have gone on sale now. So if you are into running, that'll be the weekend for you.
No, all jokes aside, it does actually sound like a really good weekend, and like a great weekend to get all ages involved as well. So, I am joking. I also do enjoy running sometimes.
Yeah, we believe you. Thousands wouldn't, George. Okay, as always, we would absolutely love you to rate, review, subscribe, and give the podcast a little follow. And please keep sending in your photos of where you're listening to the podcast.
Yeah, please do. And any suggestions that you've got for the podcast, like for topics you'd like us to cover on the Q&A or guests that you might have seen that we haven't heard of, or we might not have thought of, then please just drop us a DM. We're on @MadeByMamas, and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.